Well, what's up, and welcome to Sweathead with Mark Pollard. Today I'm in Hacktown. I'm here for a few days. It's in Santa Rita do Sapucaí, something like that. I hope I got it correct. Today I'm going to talk to you about hard truths about strategy careers, and I want to reflect a little bit about the past couple of days. I flew into Brazil on Thursday, took about 20 hours door to door from New York. We got caught in some horrible traffic, arrived in Sao Paulo. Well, got caught in the traffic after we left Sao Paulo. Took maybe 4 or 5 hours to get up here. I can't even remember. Because guess what? I didn't have a deadline that day. I didn't have a talk that day. I didn't have any meetings that day. So I was just chilling. I was totally just chilling. It was really cool. Hacktown, for those of you who don't know, started in 2016 by a couple of guys, one of whom was a planner. Carlos Enrique Vilela. I hope I get that correct. I know there's this really bad situation where people who don't speak Spanish or Portuguese will try to say a Portuguese word with a Spanish accent and the other way around. So, for example, I come up with a guy whose name is J-O-R-G-E space G-R-O-O-V-E, stage name. I was thinking I might pronounce it Jorge, but I remembered Portuguese, hard J, so that's George. And then the groove is groovy. Georgie Groovy, maybe, is how that all comes together. Funny guy. And I don't know, I just, it's such an interesting sort of festival. It's like, they call it the South by Southwest of Brazil, but I think it's a little bit different. I think it's more festive, it's less hierarchical. I've met some incredibly talented people. Like, I mean, I was sitting at dinner last night next to a guy who's a director and made the biggest Netflix show in Brazil, Beyond the Universe, and he's just having a chat. And opposite him was this hilarious guy, Edge. I don't know his last name, which is also embarrassing. I think he's the most successful soundtrack producer in the history of Brazil. He did City of God. He's constantly doing stuff. Hilarious guy. Kept telling me about all these fishes. All these fish. One of them sounds like kangaroo. I'll get it wrong. I should have looked it up before I do this, because you know that my brain inhales all the information and then I turn up to talk into a microphone and I'm like, I'm going to get the name wrong. Brain bounces around, I get nervous. So there's this fish. Is it called? Okay, it's not kangaroo, it's Grandicru or something like that. And he goes, he kept telling us stories about this fish and other fish. So the way he tells his story is, and don't forget, this is probably one of the most successful, most prolific soundtrack makers in the world, not just Brazil. And so apparently there's this little fish. And he goes, the problem with, sort of near where he lives, which is a little bit closer to the Amazon, is on the land you get snakes and all kinds of things, crocodiles and all kinds of things that are going to bite things off you. But if you go in the water, you're also going to get bitten, except for this fish, which is little and it goes into all the holes of the body, including the male genitalia. And he goes, it just goes in and it stays there. And we found that funny for at least 30 minutes. At least 30 minutes. Also at that table was, you know, a pretty well-respected up-and-coming singer who we saw perform. I think her name was Nina Meyer. Just amazing, you know. What I like about it, because I don't get around this scene at all in the US. Like, for me, New York, I just work and stress. And I know a lot of you love New York, and it might be sort of confrontational to hear me say that, because that's my own doing. But I just find the New York mindset, the individualism in the US, the fact that a lot of people who are based in New York actually travel for work quite a lot, or they seem to always disappear for 2 months for summer holidays. I don't know how you can afford to do that and also live in New York over summer. So, and for those of you who followed along for a while, yes, I have been a pretty involved, relatively speaking, compared to most of the population, a pretty involved soccer dad and things, so often driving around and not able to meet people and stuff like that. But I just find, so I'm in the streets of Santa Rita, kind of in the middle of it right now. It's a small town. It's known for electronics. It's not super technologically advanced, but I guess there have been factories that have made electronics here over the years. It's beautiful to walk around. There's beautiful hills. There's lots of events spread out through the city. I'm not sure of the population. Maybe it's a couple hundred thousand. It could be even smaller, actually. And you just have the most prolific Brazilians talking here, you know, all the heads of social media platforms, technology, obviously AI is getting discussed a lot. Last year it was probably cryptocurrency. Bitcoin, all that kind of stuff. Same thing, sort of, right? And it's just chilled. Like, I get a sense of it's a relatively flat hierarchy. And I was really, I also want to give a shout out to a few people who've sort of adopted me for a few days. One of them is Ian Beecroft, and he actually worked in agencies in Chicago, and now goes back and forth between Chicago and Sao Paulo, building a business here and back in the US. He was working at Leo Burnett for a while. Now he's a futurist, runs a company, he's got a team, and he was kind enough to kind of pull me in and take me around, and through him I've met just incredible people who know everyone. Also, apparently they know everyone at South by Southwest. So here's me thinking, maybe I should go to South by Southwest, because 7 years ago when I set up my own thing, having done talks for agencies that never really led anywhere, I stopped really talking at conferences unless I was getting paid. I was like, well, that's how I feed my family. And now I was like, maybe I should loosen up just a little bit, because this is, I don't know, it's just so enjoyable. It's just the people I've met, you know. Ian is close to a couple, Simone Kless and Jason Birmingham. He's American, been here for 20 years. And Simone is the voice of the Sao Paulo airport. is a voiceover actor and has been doing it for 20 years. Was originally pulled in by, I hope I get the name right, AJ, and forgive me if I don't know the last name, I should, from City of God, the guy who makes all the soundtracks. And so she's on television all the time where her voice is, has done TV shows, all kinds of stuff. Jason, similar. And through them, just meeting all these people, and I'm like, man, why don't we know more about Brazil? And you could say that's a you problem, but it's not, because I literally look up stuff from so many countries to watch and try to learn from. Netflix, YouTube, books, history, all kinds of stuff. Last time I went to Brazil, I came back, and in the cafe that I was writing my book in, there was a book on Brazil, and I started to read it. Because what I'd heard, and what I'd heard in Brazil from the strategist there, is Brazil is one of the most anxious, if not the most anxious, the most depressed country in the world, which is weird to me, because I see Carnival, and I envy the self-expression that Brazilians have. I sort of turned that off. I know a lot of Australians can be quite flamboyant and whatnot, but just the era I came up in, whatever I was around, we held it in. We held it in. That's what it meant to be a man, just hold it in. You know, be staunch, staunch. And so I had this kind of, like, polite, nice, loving envy of how some Brazilians can express themselves. It's not everyone, and I'm not exoticizing. But I also know that it's really depressed. And in this book that I came across that was sitting on the shelf in the at Birch, B-I-R-C-H, Birch Cafe in the Upper West Side of New York about 4 years ago, it was talking about how the way that the psyche of Brazil was formed is this combination of, yes, Catholicism and European thought mixed with indigenous spirituality. And because of the Amazon, because of nature, it's just, there's just this force that's so big. And I think it's probably why, like, the way that the government behaves with, there's a lot of corruption here, right? There are just these forces that are so big and they're so out of our control. Nature. That fish that I mentioned that'll go into your penis. That's what it's called. Sorry if you got kids listening to this. I know at least three of you listen to this with your teenagers. Shout outs to them. Totally fine to say the word penis. I'll say it again, penis. And so I think that leads to this sense of instability. And also, sorry, I forgot this as well. Brazil actually brought in the most people from Africa. You know what I'm talking about. And it's interesting because in South America, what I was told, at least in Argentina, is when slavery ended, some of the countries literally pushed black people out of their countries. And so some of the countries that don't have a lot of black people, even though they did at one time. It's hard to talk about that topic as quickly as I have without feeling like I'm trivializing it. I don't mean to. I'm really just trying to make a point about the psyche of Brazil as far as I understand it. Because, like I said, I lovingly envy it, you know? The self-expression. But I guess a lot of self-expression comes from pain. You know, a lot of inventive stuff comes from difficulty. Capoeira, Brazilian martial art, comes from indigenous and... not indigenous, let's just say, I'll say local Brazilians, I think often enslaved, right, weren't allowed to practice martial arts, so they created a dance in which they could practice martial arts and often put knives between their toes to well, hurt each other sometimes, but also to practice in a sharper way. So anyway, Hacktown, you know, for those of you thinking about life after planning, I've mentioned two people, Carlos Henrique Vilela, set it up in 2016. I think he's a few years younger than me. He could be my age, a little bit younger than me. So he and his co-founder, sorry, I forgot your name, have been making this incredible event. I don't know how many people are here. I think usually they get 20,000. I've seen 30,000. I've seen 10,000. But there are a lot of people here. And it's just chill. It's just chill. Even looking around now, just the way that people are dressed, it's kind of funky, but it's just straightforward. You know, no one's trying to... I'm not getting the vibe that people are trying to signal that they're better than other people. And the way that the events are hosted and the way that you can meet people. Sure, some things are a little bit more exclusive, but not in the way that America does it. And there's no way in hell that I'm sitting at a table with the biggest soundtrack producer of all time and an upcoming movie director in the US. That's just not going to happen. Everyone's too special. And we spoke for hours and hours and hours. It's so funny because in New York, I say to my kids, when I travel, sometimes we have dinner for 3 hours because you go to a restaurant near where we are, they want you in and out of there in like 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 40 minutes. Like, let's say 30 to 40, which is pretty quick. And we just have poor eating habits these days. Sort of just, I think we're all just burnt out. Not a lot of conversation. And so it's just so different in Europe. You know, for us, I think eating is just a task. It's a thing you do. So it's just cool. And I have been thinking to the point around how Brazil's not super well known in a detailed way outside of Brazil. Partly that's because I was told 8% of Brazilians speak English, right? So it's relatively low, but why should they? And what I was thinking, I'm going to bring this up, see if we can get a bit of traction with this, is next year for Hacktown to see if we could get they have these things called houses, so it's literally a house. They have a few of them around. I'm doing a talk in a few minutes at the House of Denmark. I don't know why it's called that. Don't know who's going to turn up. They have the House of Rocambole or something, which I was at very late on Thursday night. Massive party. There was this guy, MC Bin Laden. Totally inappropriate, but man, that crowd was crazy for him. Whew. It's crazy. If you know, you know. But maybe we could do like an English house where everything's in English, but it's about Brazil. Not everything in English about people who speak English, but everything's in English about Brazil. I'd love to come back and help make that happen. Because there's just so much talent. This quote's been in my mind. I know I say it every now and then. This quote's been in my mind for a few years now. And especially, like I'll say this, this is not a flex. It's like kind of painful to hear me say this because the economy. I've spent probably $200,000 on Upwork. Maybe I'm going to say $250,000 on Upwork and Fiverr in the past few years. I always find really good people. It's not every single person. But there's brilliant people everywhere. And when I get to travel, it just refreshes me. Because there's something about New York, the self-importance and the expense, and I don't know. It's less open in a way, although whenever I'm in the US, I expect to have a chat with someone when I'm traveling or out and about. It's totally fine. Less so in Australia and the UK. It can be a bit awkward. We're a bit more staunch. Bit more reserved in some ways, or they're crazy in other ways, especially if alcohol is involved. So I don't know, that's what I'm thinking. And then maybe a bunch of us could come down here, because the tickets, if you're in the US or in the UK, and I know the UK is doing it tough, but the tickets in the US are pretty affordable. It's, you know, maybe $200-$300 for a 3 or 4 day event. Flying here from the US under $1,000, I can't remember what I paid for myself to come here. For the record, I don't usually do that. But I had some books to sell because, oh yeah, that's the other thing. What I'm trying to do is just launch my book in Portuguese after just making mistake after mistake after mistake. I've probably lost $15,000 on it already. You know, I was here 4 years ago in August with my mate Julian Cole. We did talks at Facebook. I think we had 400 people come through and 4,000 people online, 2 sessions, and then we did our own little masterclass later. And I just had such good talks with people. I was like, oh my God, these are my people. And I'd finished the book and was about to launch a Kickstarter. We raised like $37,000, And I was like, I need to translate this book into Spanish and Portuguese because I want to reach these people. And I knew the economies were different. Like the money spending power is not as good. And I knew that doing business with some of these countries is difficult. But the thing is, to sell my book, the hardcover version, from the US to Brazil, I had to charge $60. And that's probably like $200 for a Brazilian, right? So it's a lot of money. Or let's go $150 to $200. It's obviously a lot of money. But if you've been paying close attention, my shipping prices have gone up so much where if I send one book to Brazil right now, it's $65 US just to send it, let alone cost of goods sold and trying to maintain a little bit of margin. And in my head, I try to maintain a margin of about $20 to $25 for the book. Otherwise, what's the point? What's the point? It is up on Kindle. I've left it up a little bit longer in English. I feel like a few people have been buying the hardcover book because they've seen it on Amazon as well. And the hardcover book's not on Amazon. So that's been an interesting experiment. I've also been experimenting a bit more with like paid advertising. Working with some people to help do that. But I've also been trying to boost a few posts here and there. I never did any of that. I didn't even used to put any branding, like my name or anything, on social posts because, you know, I feel like strategists and advertising people are kind of weird. We look down on that, even though we sell it. It's stupid. That's a stupid, like, riddle that you throw yourself in. The thing you sell, you're too good to do because, you know, silly. So I'm trying to do some of that stuff. And the cool thing for me being in the US about being in some of these other countries is it's less expensive to test some of these things. So I'm doing a masterclass in Sao Paulo on Wednesday, and it's going to be the cheapest masterclass I ever do. Everyone I've talked to in Brazil, everything's got to be cheaper, 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 or free. It's funny. I'm joking. That's true. And so it's cheaper, but you know, I've put a few hundred dollars behind social posts, and maybe I'll share the performance of them soon. Just playing with a few things and trying a little bit of DM, direct messaging selling, which again, I might have thought that was corny before, but it's really, really interesting. And I'm exploring this tool called ManyChat, where you can set up DM automations to the point where maybe people could DM me on Instagram and I could somehow, in a very simple way, try to coach them through a creative brief or download an ebook or buy a book, all that kind of stuff. I'm slowly looking into. I mean, you know, I wouldn't mind trying to turn my book and how I think through things into a co-pilot, like an AI co-pilot, and then also take our website from a place that has courses into a place where you could go and do your work. Lots of thoughts in my mind. So I don't know if any other thoughts are going to pop up about Hacktown, but I'm feeling energized and I don't know. I want to say you should come, but I think you're going to need English stuff. I did a talk in the main theater yesterday. I think it fit 700. We didn't have 700. We probably had a couple hundred, but really meaningful, really meaningful. And super trippy when people have sort of read your things or listened to your stuff for a while and they come up to you. It's weird for them and it's weird to me, but it's beautiful. Like it's a privilege. It's mind blowing, right? Because when you start off doing some of the stuff that I do, whether it's a podcast, writing stuff on Instagram, little essays that I do, writing a book, like you hope it finds an audience, and then it does, and then people talk to you, or they even quote interviews you've done, or it's just like, oh wow, it's literally why you do the thing, and then it happens, and then you pinch yourself, you're like, that's crazy, it's so cool. And I'm sharing that not as an act of like narcissism. It's really like I'm trying to show a lot of you who are still caught up in timesheets, which is totally fine. It's totally fine. What it's like on the other side. A lot of turmoil, a lot of stress, but there is another side. And I've been talking about this a little bit online lately. This is a weird time of year, in the Northern Hemisphere, at least August. I find January into February quite challenging and July into August quite challenging. 7 years I've been doing my own business in the US. Obviously I did a little bit of stuff with my magazine and things in my 20s, distributing music while sort of part-time and freelance working in agencies. But January into February, July into August, you know, for those of you who have the Sunday scaries, we need a name for the scaries that happen through those 4 months. So people just disappear for a month, you don't hear back about anything. Sometimes the people who disappear we'll give an agency a pitch or some kind of brief and then disappear for a few weeks, come back and want everything kind of done. Or maybe you're about to sign a deal and someone's like, I'm going on holidays now, I'm going on a vacation, and you don't hear back for a while. And that's affecting a lot of people right now. We are in a weird industry. I feel really optimistic about the people in the industry, but systematically, structurally, it's in decline, surely. You look at it from a margin point of view, what's going to happen with AI. So you've got to be at the top of your field, not to survive, but to do well. And if you're in the middle to the bottom of the field, you're going to get knocked out. That turned dark. It's hard. Like, I don't want to sort of make big, big sweeping statements about it all, but like it's a growing industry, growing-ish industry, but not like others. And if you're mediocre, your bosses are trying to work out how to replace you with technology. You guarantee it. And if you're a boss, you probably have to do that so you can survive, because the margins are shrinking. There's more project work rather than retainer work that can be harder to build a business around, because you can't forecast your money for 12 months. Maybe you get 3 months of it, 6 months of it. So it's just a little bit weird out there. All right, let's get into the content. We do have a lot of stuff coming up. Comms Planning Masterclass with Maria Van Buskirk in September from Media by Mother. Tar Brace, one of the world's most awarded strategists, masterclass in October about writing creative briefs. I'm doing the 4-week accelerator in October as well. It's my favorite program. I love it so much, and I hope people can come. Details for all of that are on sweathead.com. Let's get into the content. So I want to talk about hard truths about strategy careers. I guess I've already thrown out a few there. And there are definitely themes that I'll be repeating, and I'm okay with that, because sometimes, again, I'm showing this just from a writer's perspective, sometimes you repeat a thing, but you try to get somewhere newer with it. You try to push it a little bit further, a little bit more specific, or try to really think about the psychology of what's going on there. So I think I've got 8 of these hard truths about strategy careers. The first one is idea work is dangerous work. Idea work is dangerous work. And yeah, the work of strategists in advertising is idea work, like the ideas of good nonfiction writing. You're not trying to come up with campaign ideas, unless that's also what you're supposed to do. But I would point at the ideas of good nonfiction writing. And think about this, ideas are middle fingers to society. Ideas are middle fingers to society, because they tell society that there's a different way to be. There's a different way to look at things. And people don't like that. People do not like that. People don't want to change. Society doesn't want to change. Conservative, power-seeking, domineering people tend to get power. There's a sort of truism in that, what I just said. They seek out power. I think narcissism, power-seeking, and domineering traits, if they're things, I think they do correlate with, like, a lot of politicians have them, for example. A lot of people who take over companies or who run companies have them. It's okay. You kind of need them. You kind of need them. With all the talk about psychopaths, if you're in a war, you probably want a few psychopaths around you, because they're not going to think about hurting other people to protect you, or just because they like hurting other people. Obviously, you don't want to be dealing with a psychopath or be on the receiving end of one. But idea work is dangerous work, and I think it can lead to this cycle where the creative person has ideas. They share their ideas with the world. The world says no thanks, but the creative person has no thanks to you. We don't want your ideas, but we don't really want you either. And so the creative person can withdraw, they can feel like an outsider, but they also realize, or they start to believe, that they're a little bit broken. That's not everyone. And I have seen research about the big five personality traits where extroversion, and I know people are like, there's no such thing as extroversion, introversion, it depends who you're around, okay. Fine. But there's a little bit of a correlation between creativity and extroversion. Most strategists I know are relatively introverted. The creative teams will have introverted people, but often they're, you know, they're probably happier to dress up at the parties and things like that. I don't know. Number 2, many strategists hired in strategy careers. So it's a vicarious role, because you're talking to the world. and then you're presenting what you find in the world to people. Maybe you put that into a creative brief and you hope that a creative team comes up with ideas and that a creative team works with a director or some kind of production people to put the thing into the world. And the strategist at no point is necessarily working out how to put themselves into the world. It's very vicarious. And I think there has to be a bit of church and state with strategy, where if someone asks you your opinion, you might have an opinion, but my brain will go, well, here's what I've heard. I might say, here's my opinion, but my instinct is like, well, I interviewed 20 people. I think through the research, I think through the stakeholder interviews. I'm like, well, this is what I heard. You're kind of channeling the world. And, you know, one of my main messages, for what it's worth, is I just think there's so much potential in the heads of the strategists, and I hope you all get to write a book or something like that. Put yourself out into the world, what you think is true into the world. And not just about strategy, I've obviously done it. It's getting a little bit overplayed right now on the internet. And also, I'm going to say this, it was on my mind today. You know you're allowed to post on Twitter and LinkedIn without dissing other strategists. I'm so sick of seeing this. 2020, it started to happen. It's happening again. And I know the cycle. I know the cycle because I've been doing this stuff in public for so long that when people start to post and they want to write about strategy for the first time, they'll often DM me because I think they want me to like their stuff or repost their stuff. That's literally how it feels. Someone started a strategy podcast and I just get this obtuse message going, I've started a strategy podcast. I guess we should speak. I'm like, what? What does that even mean? I don't know what that means. I do a strategy podcast, but like, I don't understand what that means. But yeah, this week there's all these people, and some of them are friends. It's like just dissing, quote unquote, other strategists online and frameworks and insights, and just stop it. It's ugly, and it reeks of desperation, and it's full of envy. I know where it comes from. People are panicking. People are panicking about business because of what I talked about with that July-August vibe. But the July-August vibe is multiplied in the UK by Brexit. Brexit has ruined that country, I'm sorry. England's awesome. England's awesome, by the way, but they should not have Brexited. But there's just this vibe. You don't need to... Like, I'm doing it right now. I'm, quote-unquote, subtweeting the people who subtweet people. Just don't. That's a zero-sum game where you have to take from someone. You have to slap someone else so that you can get attention. It's ridiculous. And some people are building communities around them doing that. And the kids don't get it, how toxic it is. And they might not even understand. Like, I've seen some of the people who do it in multiple forms over multiple years, and I'm not gatekeeping, I'm not saying anything, do your thing. I don't need to take anyone down. But if someone's doing that easily and frequently online, what do you think they're like offline? It's super disturbing to see. Love, man. we can build each other. We can compare notes. It's totally fine. You don't have to say the people who do this suck, and here's my point of view about what doesn't suck. And some of the people who are doing this, they've never even done the strategy job. You look at the background, and they're like, never had a job in the industry. Maybe people say that about me, but I have literally spent 15 years in the industry at places like Leobet and Net McCann. I don't need to play that game. That is how, that's my insecurity coming out right now, because I know there's this nonsense out there about if you do, you know, if you can, you do, if you can't, you teach. I do and I teach. And teaching makes me better. Because in teaching, you have to think about how you think. It's called metacognition. And practice. So anyway, I'm going to move on, because some of the people who are not hiding right now, who are coming out and trying to claim space, which is, do it. But there's infinite space. Okay, you don't need to slap other people so that you can get attention. Some people are doing this every week, and it's like, man, how insecure and angry and resentful are you to be doing this? But then there's a niceness to some of the other stuff that they write about, and it's like, no. If you're leading with meanness, that's the thing. 3, some strategists fall into limbo. So I did catch up. I talk to strategists all the time, and I can almost predict if someone's freelancing, I know the kinds of things that they want to talk about. It's seriously this. I've just started freelancing. I'm thinking about joining a collective. I've been thinking about coaching. I'd love to work for a startup. I'd love to work with small businesses, and I'm going to productize myself. It's like a bingo card. It happens all the time. None of these are new ideas. People have been talking about this stuff for ages. And again, I've talked to tens and tens and tens and tens of people on that journey. And I've also thought through these things myself. Like, oh, what if I did this? And over time, you start to realize how impractical most of those options are. So coaching, for example, you'd have to charge a lot of money per hour and or have a lot of clients for that to be a sustainable business if you're living in an expensive major city. Let's say you're living in New York and you need to earn $150,000 a year, which in New York is not big money. Don't hate me. It's not big money in New York. It's probably like an $80,000 to $90,000 job in London. Or in London's a little bit more. London's salaries are really low in planning. It's super weird. Super weird. But just think, if you're going to coach, how many people are you going to need as clients? Or can you charge $5,000 an hour? No. I don't know if you're listening to this, but someone asked me to coach. CSO asked me to coach. I was like, how much would you pay? $250 an hour. That's not a thing. It doesn't work like that. Psychologists charge more. What? Your business is making multi-million dollars. I'm not taking $250 an hour. Unless I move to the middle of nowhere and have no expenses and just want to do it for fun. Because I love it, but it's super rewarding. I love that work, but it's not a sustainable business. Joining or forming a collective, the incentives and the economics of that do not work. I've been sent proposals and ideas over the years. Oh, we're going to set up this collective. There's going to be 12 of us. We're going to be from different backgrounds. An architect, a music composer, a strategist. And we're going to come in and we're going to work in two-day sprints. Cool, man. Sprint's cool, yeah. And I'm like, yeah, what are you going to charge? $100,000? So you got 12 elite people in a room for 2 days. You're going to charge $100,000? Because no one's paying $100,000. And who's getting the business? Who's going to get the business? And then are you going to tie those 12 people up so that they have to exclusively work for this collective or not? Because otherwise the economics don't work. You can't price it in a way that those people are going to be happy with. And you don't have people selling it. You don't have any exclusivity. There's no, like, hoarded value in that. It's just this dream. And it's often because the strategist is scared of being an alpha and they're scared of not hiding. They're scared of, like, really putting themselves into the world and actually setting up a business and building that business over 10 or 20 years. It scares a lot of people. And I also see it totally fine if you're doing it. I'm not dissing any of these things, by the way. I'm bringing a little bit of energy, a little bit of heat. But people will set up a company in their own name, LLC, consultant. That's cool if you want. If you think you can do that for 5 or 10 years, get a little bit of money out of it, that's fine. I just challenge you to think about actually building a brand and a business, something that you can really work for a while. Working for a startup. My startups that don't know how to use strategy, you get CEOs who want to be the author of it, they don't have the money to apply it. You need to probably be way more involved than just doing strategy and actually help them bring it to life. But then can you charge them for that? Will they even pay for it? Now, if you're going to charge $50 an hour, just forget everything I'm saying about all of this. But if you're going to charge like proper money for stuff, it's very, very difficult. I know some people have great stories, and I know strategists who work for VC companies, and it's okay. But generally speaking, startups don't know what to do with strategy. And many of them think they've done it. So what are you doing here? And why am I paying for this? It's so vague compared to programmatic advertising. Seeing the conversions based on the money I spent. Working with small businesses, that's another one. I'd love to do that. But again, same as startups, most of them don't know what to do with strategy. Sure, one of you probably has a business where you work with small businesses and it's incredible, but that's one of you. So whenever I talk about this stuff, someone will be like, well, I've done this. So it's like, okay, cool, that's you. I'm talking generally. And then productizing yourself, that's difficult. And I do it a little bit, but let's say you've got like a workshop that you sell for $5,000, $10,000, $20,000, whatever it is. There's something about productizing that tries to make you feel that you're becoming easier to buy, and it can work. You know, I was told there's a big agency on the West Coast that's done a lot of this stuff, and it's generated a lot of business for them over the years. Every agency I've been in for the past 12 to 15 years has thought about this kind of stuff. It's hard because you need to sell a lot of products for it to be worthwhile. Otherwise, there's this risk that it anchors the price too low. You know. Yeah, there's a bunch of agencies. And look, I tried to do this when I joined Leo Burnett in New York and was working with Kieran Antill, who I'd worked with in Sydney. And we tried to come up with a new way of working, I don't know if this was the name we were going to use or just like a project name. We called it X10. We published this video on YouTube, put up a PDF on LinkedIn. It was all about sprints and being easy to buy. It was all the stuff that was kind of faddish. Well, it was faddish for the advertising industry 8 to 9 years ago, but it's stuff I'd been around for like years before that, but it just hadn't crossed over into the mainstream parts of the agency industry. I think it just sounds cool, but it's hard. It's hard. And you're in an industry right now that my clients want, they want to know what you're charging by the hour. And sometimes, very often, they want to know what the individual employees are getting paid, also as well as, generally speaking, the job title and the range. They have full access, full view. It's crazy. You don't buy a hamburger and know the cost of the hamburger. we've messed up. We've really messed up. So if you're freelancing right now, there's a risk that you're going to feel in limbo at some time. And you need to be aware of how people start to manipulate you, because you might be enjoying the freelance life, and then all of a sudden the people you're working with, they start sniffing around to see if you're available for full-time work. And maybe you've led them on because you want to feel wanted, or you're scared. And that's why I think setting up a business with a proper business name, it's a stronger signal to the world, but it's a big commitment to yourself as well. You're like, nope, this is what I am, I'm a business. When I started out, and I'd been around for a long time, people kept trying to suss me out to see if I was like available for a job. I'm like, we're having a business to business interaction. Someone would hire me and they'd get some junior HR person to try to onboard me. And they're like, what do you charge per hour? I'm like, I don't charge per hour. I've spoken to 10 people at your company about this. Stop doing what you do. You know what I mean? Because the company and the people in the company, they want to see you as they want to see you, which helps them protect their own value, but there'll often be a diminishment of your value. I try not to do it to people, but I don't know. 4, great strategy seems to happen at the best creative agencies. I've talked about all these things just a little bit. If you can get into a great agency that's winning a lot of awards, I don't know, people are like, oh, awards, bleh. Just stop. They're fine, relax, they're fine. But if you can get a few years, like 3 years, 3-4 years in a really high-performing creative agency, even if you're an average strategist, you can trade on that for a good decade. You can. 5, too many people have opinions about ideas when they shouldn't. This has been super disturbing to me because I had to kind of play along when I was working in large agencies in corporate America. And you'd be in workshops or meetings discussing strategy and ideas, and it would just repeatedly dawn on me that the people I was talking with, that they don't really understand what we do or what an idea is or what creativity is or necessarily even why they've hired us. And as I've been in more and more rooms like that over the years, it's not a diss on anyone, okay, but I'm now of the opinion that a lot of people just shouldn't have opinions about ideas. Like, I don't have a lot of opinions about how to build a building. And if I hired someone to build a building, yeah, I might have a few opinions about design and stuff, but I'm not going to like, I'm going to find someone who's really good at it and try to trust them. I don't know how to fly a plane. I don't get on the plane and have opinions about flying a plane after I've bought a ticket. So like, just because you've bought an agency or you've bought some kind of creative work, especially in the past 10 years, there's so many logical people out there. I love you, but there's so many logical people out there, hard and logical people. They've got all their answers. And I can tell you that a lot of strategists are paying a mental health toll for that shift. 15 years ago, a lot of really great big brands were pretty good at marketing and pretty good at strategy and understanding creative briefs. Unilever, P&G, Diageo. Sure, if you've worked with them, you might have had some strange situations. Diageo, I don't know if they still do, but they used to have books, handbooks on how to do strategy. And some of their processes were a little bit weird, like you had to fill in forms when you presented ideas and all this sort of stuff, but there was an intention to do really good work. The past 10 years, this growth hacking mindset, the engineering mindset, the product marketer, marketing people reporting into salespeople increasingly. There's a complete mistrust of marketers because people don't get it. They resent it. Most marketers aren't doing 4 P's, product, price, place, promotion. They're doing promotion. And that's why you see online a lot of people talk about marketing and actually talking about promotion or advertising. You know, the best way to market your product is X. Where like marketing is all of the four P's, and some people would say there are even more P's. So, I don't know. Too many people have opinions about ideas when they shouldn't. I did shift my mood when I was talking about the subtweeting, and I feel like I am bringing a little bit of outrage to this interaction, which is not what I had intended to do. The reason that that one upsets me is what I said, that I feel like a lot of strategists and people in creative teams pay a mental health toll for the shift in the culture. The shift in culture and capability. We are mediocre. This industry is mediocre. I know a lot of people are debating the Dr. Karen Nelson Field research with Walk about the attention threshold, where they looked at, I think, 130,000 pieces of advertising and said that 85% don't even get into people's heads. They don't register because people don't pay attention to them for more than 2.5 seconds. And I know there are people saying, oh, that's kind of made up and it's not real, etc. I think we feel that there's a truth in it because we're aware of how much mediocrity there is. Access to stock photos, a distrust of marketing and advertising, and sometimes well deserved, because let's face it, the 99s and the 2000s, advertising agencies were fleecing clients. I think, when was it? I would say, I hope I get this correct, but I would say 20 plus years ago, people were charging $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 for iBlaster flash ads. It's crazy. It's so much money. It felt like a lot of money back then, but it's a lot of money now too. Imagine, I don't know, does anybody here pay that much money for a banner ad? iBlaster was next level for sure, but that's a lot of money. 6, the quality of writing and strategy is not good enough. Again, I see a lot of stuff. It's not a diss. I'm reflecting, I'm reporting. I'm not saying I'm good at it. I try to write. And that's all you can really do. You can just try to write. I see a lot of decks, a lot of case studies. I'm like, whoa, what is happening here? 30 slides before you make a point, and half of those slides have 5 boxes on them. That's not a good reading experience. It doesn't show you that you're smart. It actually shows that you don't know what you're doing and you're insecure. I still think about this. I wrote a book, Strategy Is Your Words. I remember sitting down feeling stupid. I was like, well, what am I going to call this thing? I knew I wanted to turn my main, I guess, masterclass into part of the book. And I knew I wanted to write about the things that strategists DM me about, that talk to me about, being a lone wolf, confusion, clarity, all this sort of stuff. And I was like, well, I have to use the word strategy, because if I don't, the world just ignores me. That's how it feels. And I keep talking about words. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm going to call this book Strategy Is Your Words. That's not even good English. I was like, screw it, I'm doing it, I'm in, and it's so obvious. But I sat there kind of astonished, and I just thought about all the training I'd done, the workshops I'd run, the meetings I'd had for the previous few years in New York. I'm like, it's the words, they're not good. And for the record, I know that Martin Weigel wrote a blog piece called Strategy Needs Good Words. That was after I'd announced this book. I'm just putting that on the record, because sometimes I talk about this, and some a-hole in England, it's always a middle-aged white dude, sorry, I know you hate it, I know you hate all that stuff, and I know it, be like, oh, someone did this before you, and I'm like, no, it's around the same time, and neither of us care, we're not competing, it's totally fine. So yeah, words, bros, there's a new rule, actually, in England. You don't have to quote Socrates and Plato in your presentations anymore, or Shakespeare. Yeah. It was announced this week by the account planning group. So when you go to renew or for your first account planning license in the UK, just remember that in the multiple choice quiz. It's a joke. 7. Most creative teams probably don't want to work with you. Let's just get it out there. It's sad. It's you know, doing the work that they do is hard, because a lot of them wish they were doing something else. It's a fact. Wish they were writing a book, making movies, and a lot of them do those things as well as or later, okay? But some resent having to work in advertising, even though a lot of them can, if they do well, earn a lot of money. I still remember sitting down with Vicky Ross from the UK, lovely copywriter, great person online, great community builder. We sat down and had a chat. She's like, I think she said something like this. I hope I'm not putting words into your mouth. She said something like, I always wanted to be a copywriter. I've not heard that before. Most people I know in advertising kind of fell into it. Unless you've got someone in the house growing up, you know, who owned an agency, which I come around those people a little bit. I mean, I didn't really know what it was. My granddad was a finance guy, like at Philips. He did really well. Didn't go to university or college, but he, super smart guy, did got a Dutch knighthood. There you go. There you go. I'll put that out there. Really into electronics and making things and that, what, the hamster radio, all that stuff. He's always tinkering away. He's a big dude. He's 6'3", 6'4", I think. Big dude. I feel like I'm one of the smaller ones in the family. Even with my stepbrothers, they're massive. One of them used to be able to squat 500 pounds and was one of the fastest people in the state of New South Wales. They're older than me, so... Because my parents had kids when they were older, so we're often quite young compared to other people around us. Not always, but often. And what was my point? Oh my God, how did I jump onto that tangent? Jeepers. That's because I stopped therapy. I did 8 months of therapy. It's so expensive. Cost-benefit analysis, not sure. Therapy is 50% effective, according to the research. I enjoyed it, but it's expensive. American prices are too... It's hard. Now I just feel stupid. I'm like, why do I keep talking about the same thing? And then eventually you break through. Let me get back to my point. Most creative teams probably don't want to work with you. Yeah, because they want to be doing other stuff. A lot of strategists, they don't make it any easier for all of us. We've all written bad briefs. We've all been annoying to work with. It's just part of the learning process. You know, I know people who are doing strategy, leading strategy teams, and the CCO doesn't even want a creative brief. They just want deliverables and channels and stuff like that. They just want the person out of the way or strategy out of the way. And sometimes that's just because from an egoic point of view, they want to do the strategy and have the idea, but also maybe they don't really get strategy. I think that's pretty common in the US. I'd say it's more common in the US than Australia and the UK. I've worked with a lot of creative teams. They're like, oh, I've never worked with someone like you before. And they're in their 40s, 50s. Or they worked with someone and they were just like, they were so difficult, big words, they were too formal and pompous. And by the way, I'm not complimenting myself, I'm just reporting the things that I heard, because I don't click with a lot of teams. Like I'd say just when I left was probably the moment where I could have been my most effective in agencies, but I just could not click with a couple of agencies that I worked in. I think part of that's the US corporate culture, the individualism, the lack of strategy, literacy. I think a lot of mediocrity is tolerated, and it's tolerated often because the people running the companies don't even know that the work's mediocre, and they're focused on the sale, sort of business and sales over everything else. Final one, you probably won't change the company you just joined. I wish I told myself this when I was young. According to Harvard Business Review, most change initiatives do not succeed, and I'm not talking just about you coming in doing quote-unquote change initiatives. Companies don't change very quickly. Yes, there are always these amazing stories. I mean, Matt Baxter, he's an Aussie, same age, I think, same age. He helped build Naked in Australia, probably in his early, I guess it would have been early to mid-20s. He was running, I think, Universal McCann in Australia and then came to the US. Sorry, Matt won't listen to this, so he won't know that I'm saying this. And then he was running, which company? Not PhD, that was Nathan, was that Nathan Brown? CSO CEO. He was running a big media company. Yeah, oh my gosh, which one? I've forgotten. And now he's running Huge. And a book's just come out about the transformation he's trying to do there. Because he's like change-oriented, super smart. But at the same time, this book came out, I'm getting messages saying they just let go a lot of people. Now, does that mean the change initiative has failed? No. No, it doesn't mean that. It just means that the stories that we hear about these big change initiatives that we buy into, they're not always real. They're not always fully real. And that's not a diss, again, not a diss on anyone. I'm just saying there's always multiple realities going on at once. And a lot of strategists, we're romanticists, a lot of us. We're idealists. People use that stuff on us. Oh, we just need you to come in, or someone to come in as a head of digital strategy or head of strategy and help us change. One person can't do that. And the only way that kind of change happens is if there's a whole change of operating system, a change of philosophy, a change of frameworks, templates, processes, strategies built in by default into scopes. The strategist doesn't have to run around the building or the Zooms trying to find the work, or the strategist doesn't have to work for free on pitches and then ask the team, hey, why didn't you put my team on the paying job now that you got free work out of us, which happens in all the PR agencies. At the same time, you know what? I think I can say this, and you might even be listening. Caught up with Victoria Gates Fleming, lovely English person who's over in LA at day one. Was an account person, became a strategist at the start of 2022, I believe. Yes, has taken my course and is very kindly positive about that experience. I believe, I hope it's okay me saying this, Victoria. I think it is, because I want to celebrate you. I think you've got about 9 strategists in your team across 3 cities, 2 or 3 cities, growing. It's incredible. It's rare, super rare. And I got to say, like, if you're in a strategy team, let's say, I'll talk to the leaders out there, if there's 3 of you listening. If you're in a strategy leadership position and you like the people who are your clients and you mostly like the brands you're working with and you're growing a team and the executive team listens to you and they hire or make changes, I don't think it gets better. And it might only happen once in your career, unless you just have this incredible reputation and the skills, the strategy skills, but also the politics skills to make it happen again and again and again. But to me, that's like peak career in a good way. Because most people are like battling in the trenches, just trying to get respect, attention, worrying if their work's any good. Why doesn't the creative team want to work with them? You know, pitching, client says, love the strategy, not the ideas, and that's not good. That's not useful. Sort of weird passive-aggressive. It's a bit mean, that kind of feedback, actually. Most companies don't change very quickly. Yes, there are stories like the Matt Baxter one about Huge that are out there, but they're not always the full reality. And to get any change happening, it's got to be the whole company. I've been in places where they're like, oh, we don't do top-down change, like PR firms, because they're so... the matrix organizations. And matrix organizations are organizations where people have a lot of dotted lines, and dotted lines to me are doublespeak. You report to that person, a little bit to that person, but you're mostly alone. That's matrix organization. So they foster a certain competition, and the people who are in those organizations love that because they can pit people against each other. So let me go through those again, and then I guess I'll wrap up. Hard truths about strategy. Careers, number one. Idea work is dangerous work. 2, many strategists hide in strategy careers. 3, some strategists fall into limbo. 4, great strategy seems to happen at the best creative agencies. 5, too many people have opinions about ideas when they shouldn't. 6, the quality of writing in strategy is not good enough. 7, most creative teams probably don't want to work with you. 8, you probably won't change the company you just joined. Now, if you're going to post online in the next week or two, just try to find something loving to say. I know I write in a direct way, but the thing is, like, people who spend any time with me, they sort of know that I'm half joking, and a lot of what I've tried to do isn't necessarily to get people to believe what I think. It's just to dislodge them, the way that they think from them, to loosen things up a little bit so they can work things out for themselves in a new way without being dogmatic. I'm about to do a talk at the House of Denmark here. I have no idea if anyone's going to turn up. And it's called Executives. When it comes to creativity, you are the problem. I'm going to run people, I don't even know who's turning up. I guess they're executives. I was told they're executives, but I don't know if it's 2 people, 20 people, 50 people. I don't know who they are, where they're from. It's going to be in English. I'm going to run people through lateral thinking. I'll talk about the Big 5 personality traits, and then we'll discuss. I'll also, through the Big 5 personality traits, I'll talk to these people about how what companies look for in executives, right, and how that can make them the problem when it comes to creativity, and also the difference between small growing companies and established companies. They tend to, from what I understand, have a different cluster of personality traits in them. Tonight, I'm excited about that. I've got a meet up with Gruppo de Planejamento, which is like the APG here, account planning group here, in an Italian restaurant. Again, I don't know who's going to come, but I'm trying to draw some inspiration from a few YouTube channels. So I think we're going to do a game where I'm going to share 5 essays from my Instagram, and I'm going to get people to rank them. You know how this happens on like those sort of teenage or early 20s programs where they'll rank players, or they'll rank, I don't know, people like blind dates based on how they cook food. So I'm going to try something like that. Maybe have some people on stage and guess which of these posts have reached the most people. It's a bit of fun. And then tomorrow, I'm doing something at 10 a.m. on Sunday. Now, I don't know if anyone's going to turn up to this because it's going to be crazy tonight. I'm talking like the few venues that are here, they're going to be packed to like 3 a.m., 4 a.m. And I'm doing a thing about burnout and creativity at 10 a.m. No idea if anyone's going to come to that. That session is called F Burnout Bye Bye Creative Blocks. I decided to be provocative. Again, not sure if anyone's going to turn up, but going to run people through some writing exercises, including this little cheeky framework that I've developed that's part of this writing course called Write Yourself Into Public. That I think I'm going to turn it into a book in September or October. I am. I'm going to. It's called the Adept AF, Adept as System for Savage Self-Expression, shortened to ASS, A-A-S-S-S. And in that, talk about audience, talk about desperation. I just think if you're not desperate, if you don't feel pain, I think it's hard to keep going. And I know there's a bias in the way that I talk about that stuff because I tap into desperation and pain to write. And not everyone does, but I think a lot of good people do. I'm not saying I'm good, but I think a lot of good people do. I read Stephen King's autobiography on writing. Whew, a lot of pain there. All right, if you enjoyed this, I don't know, share it with someone. Give it a review. Nobody rates or reviews my podcast. I think we're nearly 1.6 million listens. It's had like, I don't know, 80 ratings in 5 years. What is it? Strategy people, you're hiding. Oh my gosh. Find us on Instagram at Mark Pollard. I'll see you again soon. Peace. Come to Hackdown next year, yeah?
Thank you for listening to this episode of Sweathead. If you enjoyed it, please share it with a friend, subscribe to our newsletter, find us on Instagram or LinkedIn at Sweathead. And if you're interested in finding out about our strategy memberships, company training, or books, visit sweathead.com. Whoop, whoop.